A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Thank you for being here as always. The new season, folks, well, it's upon us because the Community Shield, as opposed to the Community Shield, is taking place tomorrow, Saturday, and that is seen as the traditional season curtain raiser, if you like. Arsenal versus Liverpool, FA Cup winners against the title winners. So, you know, it's here, and it doesn't feel like last season ended more than about 3 seconds ago. Mikel Arteta was asked today at his press conference, I'm recording Thursday, obviously, he was asked, what's the match fitness like? What's the match sharpness like? And he said,
Well, we had 2 training sessions, so...
Which just about tells you what we're going to be like tomorrow. And really, it tells you how seriously we should take this game because the preparations that we were putting in place for the new season, which starts on September 12th, we're going to have the Community Shield this weekend. There are internationals next week. So in terms of getting players fit, getting players ready, dealing with players coming back from holidays and having to quarantine and everything else, this is going to be a really weird, difficult start to the new season. And even though it feels like we kind of wiped the slate clean a bit in terms of how we ended last one, the weirdness and the surrealness and the strangeness just continues going into this season. So whatever happens at Wembley tomorrow, I think we have to frame it in this particular context. If we win, great. If we don't win, if we make mistakes, if the fitness isn't great, if we end up getting beaten, I think it's wise just to take some distance from this game and not lose our reason. The manager and his staff have got a really difficult job to do for the important games that are coming up, which start on September 12th, as I said, against Fulham away from home. That's the one that we've got to be really concerned about, not tomorrow, not the Community Shield. It's just, it feels like an imposition, if you like. But part of the reason we're playing in that, or in fact, the only reason we're playing in that, is because we ended last season with success and with the FA Cup win. So that's the price of success. It is the football equivalent of becoming a movie star and having the paparazzi chase you as soon as you try and go anywhere. Or something like that, anyway. Let's not worry about crap analogies or metaphors or whatever it might be. A little bit later on, I'll be talking to James about some of the things that Mikel Arteta spoke about at his press conference. Some interesting stuff. He talked about Matteo Guendouzi. He talked about Ainsley Maitland-Niles and his future. There was talk of Danny Ceballos. There was talk of, you know, preparing the players for the new season, etc., etc. He was also asked about Gabriel from Lille and his arrival, which we all kind of assumed was imminent, but it doesn't seem as if everything is quite done yet. This is what he had to say about the transfer at his press conference.
Regarding Gabriel, we cannot announce anything yet. The deal is not finalized. You all know that is a player that we're following for a long time, and hopefully we can get it done.
Hi, Mikel. You mentioned Gabriel there. Is everything okay with that deal?
Well, everything is okay when both parties sign the clubs and the players agree the terms and he goes through the medical. And sometimes that in the last final stages is not as easy as it looks. But again, we are pretty positive that we can do it.
Which, you know, is a bit of a bummer for obvious reasons, because we all like a new signing. We all want it to be confirmed and everything else. But also because a big part of the conversation I'm about to have with my first guest is based on the assumption that, that Gabriel is going to sign. I don't think it's a case that, that it's in doubt. He said he sounds pretty positive, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought maybe by the time this went out, it might have all been announced. But it hasn't been. Something worth bearing in mind, you know, when you listen to this conversation about Gabriel, about William Saliba, about Nicolas Pepe and much more. I'm delighted to welcome back to the show France-based football writer, broadcaster and author. It's Matt Spiro. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Andre.
Can we start by talking a little bit first about the new Ligue 1 season, which is encountering some issues because of COVID-19, and I think with talk of fans being allowed back in stadiums in England starting hopefully in October, that's when Arsenal certainly have got earmarked for a limited number of fans to get back into the stadiums. What exactly is happening, and what's the impact it's having on games?
Yeah, there has been quite a big impact. I'd start by saying that in general, my feeling sort of having, I haven't been back to the UK, but my family are over there. I feel like in France, things are very relaxed just in general. They're bringing in stricter measures now, but I kind of feel like in France in June, the virus had pretty much gone and everybody just started getting on with life a little bit as normal. And that was premature. So I think that's reflected a little bit in terms of the football teams and the preparations. And we've been going around a few clubs doing shoots and doing interviews, and you know, some clubs sort of take your temperature before you arrive, but you know, there's not big kind of precautions. You know, the players are not that sort of protected. I think they're going to have to, you know, get a lot tighter with that. So basically, a good number of clubs have had positive cases of COVID. What we're seeing a lot at the moment is players being tested positive without actually having any symptoms. So, you know, it's obviously the fact that they're doing this testing now every couple of days, that they're picking up a lot of positive cases that I think would have gone undetected otherwise. So in the first weekend, last weekend, we had the opening game was postponed. That was Marseille-Saint-Etienne. Marseille had five cases. They've got three more this week, so eight COVID cases. They're supposed to be playing their first game against Brest this weekend. We're going to hear today or tomorrow whether that will be postponed or not. Mm. 10 or 12 different clubs all have cases at the moment. So, and the LFP, the French League, have said if you have four COVID cases within the 8 days before a game, then you have to postpone the game. But there seem to be, you know, so many games in danger of being postponed that there's talk that they're going to kind of relax that a little bit, which, you know, I'm not sure is a good idea, but they're aware of the pressure of having to get games in because already the season's starting a bit late, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, this weekend we've got Rennes, Montpellier, which is under threat. I think there are at least three cases at Rennes, and the Marseille game against Brest. So, what with COVID and also PSG deciding they fancied a bit more of a rest after the Champions League, so their game's off this weekend.
Right.
It's a little bit... a little bit tricky to start of the season.
I mean, is there any correlation between what's happening with the rise in cases? You know, you talked about the relaxation, and I think that's been apparent in, certainly here in Ireland. It's been apparent, I think, in England, where, you know, the initial kind of drama of it all has diminished to an extent. But is there any correlation between what's happening with the players and that relaxation in terms of their time off ahead of the new season? Because I know certainly, a lot of Premier League players were away and have gone on holidays and have taken some time abroad. And I'm sure most will have taken a lot of precautions, but it only takes one guy in the group to perhaps asymptomatically, as you say, pass it on to more.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's been different here because, you know, the season didn't restart. So the players were kind of off doing their own thing for several months. They started their pre-season early. So they've been together since July, training. But yeah, the measures have been nowhere near as stringent as they were in the Premier League. What we've seen in France is that, you know, particularly in August, because people are not travelling for their holiday, they're not going abroad for their holidays, everybody's kind of, you know, flock to the south of France or to Brittany in the west. Mm. And so you've got, that's why, you know, in particular, we've had Marseille, Nîmes, Nice, Montpellier, they're all struggling because, you know, they are, Marseille is a red zone. So you know, it's difficult because the players are not, they're not living in isolation. And yeah, the virus is very, very active at the moment. And I'm not a medical expert, but there does seem to be, you know, there does seem to be an awful lot of cases where players are not getting symptoms. So when they say we've got 5,000 new cases in France today, they're the ones being tested. So you just wonder what the real figure is, because it's obviously going around a big chunk of the population.
Yeah, so it's community transmission. And you know, are there plans in France to let fans back in stadiums yet, or is there?
Yes, yeah. No. Fans are back. Well, right. we've got 5,000 is the limit. So we've got 5,000 fans in the stadiums. And again, I just think it's kind of, you know, not necessarily coherent with everything else that's going on. We saw in the cup finals, fans quite grouped together and not necessarily wearing masks. The Ligue 1 matches last, I commentated Lille against Rennes, and I thought it looked quite good because we had 5,000 fans, albeit in a big stadium, but there was a lot behind one goal and along one side. So the TV kind of saw that quite well. And they were spaced out, and it was it was nice to see supporters in there. And they're doing a kind of mixture of real crowd noise and sort of piped in noise. Right. So it kind of feels like there's a really good atmosphere, but it's not quite real. It's a bit more real than the totally fake, but
slightly more real. Okay. Well, look, we'll see how it goes. And obviously, you know, the fact that it's starting up ahead of some of the other leagues it'll be interesting to keep an eye on how it goes and how things go there, and whether it might, you know, we might see some of the same issues in terms of the Premier League. Let's talk about two defenders, one who we believe is going to be signing for Arsenal, one who has signed for Arsenal. Well, he signed for Arsenal last season and spent that season on loan at his former club, Saint-Étienne, is William Saliba. He played his first game for the club this week in the friendly against MK Dons. It's obviously way, way too early to make any kind of judgment about the kind of player he is. But I'm just curious about what sort of a season he had last season at Saint-Étienne. Clearly, the decision to leave him there on loan was to let him play regularly and to develop. Was there that kind of development in his game? Was it a kind of season that he could build on?
Yeah, I saw a photo of him from that friendly. I think that might have been the biggest pair of shorts an Arsenal player has ever had. I mean, he's a big boy, and those shorts were huge. He had a difficult season because of injuries. He had a bit of a groin problem, and then more seriously, broke metatarsal. That hampered him a lot. So it wasn't ideal in that respect. Arsenal and obviously Saint-Étienne and Saliba would have liked him to play more. But I think, you know, he's a year older. He's had another year in Ligue 1, you know, albeit not a complete season. But, you know, he continued to look the part when he did play this season. I mean, you know, I saw a few of the games. One game really sticks with me because it was the Cup semi-final against Rennes, where, you know, I was particularly attentive to his performance. And in the first sort of 5 or 10 minutes, he conceded a penalty. So I thought, oh God, it's David Luiz Mark II. No, I didn't. But, you know, it was like he kind of left his foot in and tripped the guy up, and Ren took the lead. And I just thought what was interesting is that as the game went on, his presence in the game got bigger and bigger. He defensively was absolutely brilliant. And it was almost like he felt like he had to atone for that error. He ended up being the man of the match. Saint-Étienne got back to 1-1, and in the last minute, Saliba surged sort of forward from the defence into the midfield, played a good pass to the edge of the box, ball broke to Boudabouz, who scored. So, you know, Saint-Étienne won it last minute 2-1, and Saliba was voted man of the match. And I just thought that said so much about this guy's character. You know, massive game for him, concedes a penalty early on, and he was really impressive. And I think that is what we're getting. I think Arsenal, if Gabriel comes as well, I think we're getting two proper defenders. And I'd say that with more confidence about Saliba than with Gabriel. I've got no reason to think Gabriel would be a poor signing. It's just that I haven't seen quite as much of him, and he's not a guy who has stood out as much as Saliba. Saliba, I remember making his debut at 17, and you know, he was a boy, and he already, you know, he already looked very much like a man who was just totally at home at that level. And it did make me think, and I'm not, you know, it's really easy and unhelpful to make comparisons, but I commentated Raphael Varane when he was 17 playing for Lens, and I had that exact same feeling that, you know, you don't quite believe the guy's age, and you think, well, this is clearly a special player.
Well, that's certainly promising. Not that you're heaping more expectation and pressure on him among the Arsenal fan base, but no, it's a nice bit of insight there. I mean, when we talk about his game and what he might bring to Arsenal and the kind of player that he is, I think we can look at, you know, central defenders these days. You know, I guess everyone's looking for their own Virgil van Dijk, if you like, the physical presence, the speed, the agility, the ability to turn, the ability to play. You know, you've got to be this kind of all-in-one package now to be the kind of center half everybody wants. And Saliba seems to tick a lot of those boxes. Are there aspects of his game that you think in the very short term Mikel Arteta is going to look at and look to improve? I mean, one of the things, and it could just be a case that this is the first game he's played in X amount of time and the first game of preseason, and everyone's a little bit rusty, but one of the things that struck me when I was watching him against MK Dons, his passing was very good, and that's a positive thing. His first touch sometimes was a little bit on the heavy side. And I don't know if that's an aspect of his game that needs work, or if it's just simply a case that this is the first game that he's played since the last time he played for Saint-Étienne, and we're now in August, and, you know, preseason is just beginning, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I think he'll be all right in that respect. I don't think he has a particular issue there. He used to play as a midfielder. He used to be an attacking midfielder in his youth, and it was sort of the age of 14 or so that he converted to centre back. And even then, his coaches say that, you know, when we were losing, we just put him either into midfield or up front. So, you know, he's a guy who he does have, you know, he is quite comfortable on the ball. So I think he'll be all right in that respect. In terms of first few matches and what have you, he is a big, heavy guy. I mean, you know, I don't mean overweight, but it just his build is very, very solid. And he has had injuries in the last year. So I'd say initial concerns would be, just sort of getting up to speed. He'll need sort of games in terms of keeping up with strikers on the turn, because, you know, I think he's a sort of player. We saw it with Sol Campbell when he was sort of out, similar sort of build. He took a few games sometimes to get up to speed, and he would sometimes put on a bit of weight when he was injured. So, you know, I just think it's, a case of keeping him fit, getting a few games. And if in the first few games you see him get turned a bit too easily, you know, that might happen. But no, I mean, I think in terms of his ball control, his passing, and overall his, you know, his speed once he is fit and going, he'll be all right. He'll be all right. You know, I think as with any young player, it'll be a question of concentration. I think the Premier League is relentless in terms of pace and intensity. So that's the other aspect that he will have to get used to.
Mikel Arteta has spoken a little bit about, you know, expectation levels. And when you make a £28 million central defensive signing, and this is a year ago when Arsenal made this, of course, there is a measure of expectation that comes with the price tag itself, you know? And at 18 years of age, as he was then, to pay that amount of money to secure his future, to pay the money and leave him there because you want the player that badly, also does that. But from what you're saying, I mean, look, I think everybody listening to this can understand that a 19-year-old coming to the Premier League, to English football, may take, you know, more than a season, perhaps, to really find his feet and to develop. 20 is still very young for a centre-half. 24 sometimes can be considered young for a centre-half, considering how much learning there is to do in that position. But from what you're saying, and from some of the things that you've seen from him, the pressure or the character that he has, you know, he'll be able to cope with that well enough, do you think?
Yeah, I do. I think so. I think there are a few things he's got on his side that would be, you know, he's coming in effectively not to replace Tony Adams or Sol Campbell. He's coming in to replace Mustafi or Rob Holding or what have you. So I just think Arsenal fans at the moment are, you know, they know what's happened in the last few years. They're clever enough. They're patient, or I think they will be patient, because they know this is a guy, you know, who could become a very important Arsenal player for years to come. So I think there'll be a certain amount of indulgence if he does make a few early mistakes. I mean, they don't want him to look like a sort of, you know, a clown out there, but I don't think that's the case. And I think he is a very accomplished defender. And, you know, in terms of his temperament, he's just taken so many giant strides already. And without wanting to certainly like put Arsenal down, that's the last thing I would want to do. But I don't think he sees this as the end. Do you know what I mean? I think he sees this as the beginning. And he talks about, you know, wanting to emulate Varane, win Champions Leagues, play for France. Mm. So, you know, this is a step. I'm not saying it's a stepping stone, because we all hope that he'll help Arsenal get back to the top, and there'll be no need to go anywhere else in his career. But, you know, I don't think he'll be looking at this as like a really, really daunting... He'll be looking at it as a very exciting challenge. I don't think he'll be daunted by it.
Okay, well, that's positive. And I think it's good sometimes if the pressure works both ways, if you like, in terms of what a player might expect from his career at a club. And if, you know, the club can respond to that and give the players what they want. I mean, there's something similar going on, obviously, with Aubameyang to an extent, in terms of convincing him in the final stages of his career that his sporting ambitions can be realized with Arsenal. And you know, from what we hear, somebody has done that. Obviously, there's a financial element to it as well. But there's an element of belief in what Arteta can do and how he can rebuild things. And part of that, I suppose, is fixing gaps and bringing in a young central defender who can be part of the future is an interesting aspect of it. I think the other interesting aspect of what's going on is the links to Gabriel from Lille. It's sort of strange in a way, isn't it, that Arsenal are bringing in a left-footed central defender just months after already bringing in another left-footed central defender in Pablo Mari, who joined from Flamengo on loan in January. His move was made official during the summer. But talk to us a little bit about Gabriel and what kind of a player he is and how he's made a breakthrough at Lille, because, you know, he arrived from Brazil to their B team. He had some spells out on loan. So how did those go for him, and how did his path to his breakthrough season at Lille come about?
Yeah, well, I mean, just as an aside, pretty much everybody that Lille have signed since Luis Campos has been in charge, and it's been what, three seasons now, has paid, you know, has paid off in an incredible way.
So you're saying
it's a massive sort of vote of confidence that Luis Campos bring
Luis Campos to Arsenal. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it wouldn't be a bad idea. It wouldn't be a bad idea. Sadly, sure, he's wouldn't. Jose Mourinho's best mate, so I'm not sure he's going to join Arsenal. But yeah, so, you know, so they brought him in. Apparently, he had two or three months at the club as a 19-year-old at Lille, and had a long chat with Luis Campos, and it was decided that he would benefit from going out on loan. So he moved to a second division side, Troyes, played a bit there, didn't play a huge amount, moved to Dynamo Zagreb for another 6 months. And by all accounts, that was much more successful, and he helped them to win the double. And I think that was a very positive move for him. And then, so it was the 2018-19 season that he got his break. This was a great season for Lille, where they had a chap called Nicola Pepe who was rattling in the goals every weekend. Mm. And he and Gabriel struck up a really good understanding with Jose Font, who had just joined the club. And he's also turned out to be a good signing. So he joined at 34. He'd been in China. We all thought, not sure about that. But Font has really sort of stabilised the defence. And Gabriel has benefited from having his experience alongside him. So he, you know, second half of that season, he helped them finish second, get into the Champions League. And then last season was his first kind of full season as a Lille starter. And he's just been really, really solid, really consistent. Played in the Champions League. Lille generally struggled. They were with Chelsea, Ajax and Valencia. They finished bottom of the group. He did okay. And yeah, a young man who is in some respects like Saliba in that he's 6'3", Saliba 6'4". He's very good in the air. He's a good passer as well. But like Saliba, he's a young man, and he's had one season, you know, one full season in Ligue 1. So I was a bit surprised as well when I heard the links. I thought, well, hang on, they've just signed Pablo Mari. What's the thinking here? But I guess the thinking is they're going to try and offload a few centre backs. And yeah, like I said at the start, Andrew, I think Gabriel is a proper defender. He's no nonsense. He's strong in the tackle. He's strong in the air. He's probably not the quickest. I'm not saying he's really slow, but he's probably not the quickest. You probably need somebody with a bit of pace alongside him. I think they're signing two guys who are very good, strong, big defenders who are going to be certainly help Arsenal in the air at the back.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, looking forward, it could be a good partnership. I wouldn't necessarily see Saliba and Gabriel starting in a back four, because I think that's probably too big a gamble. You never know. But possibly in a back five with David Luiz.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, because obviously the physical size, the presence that Arsenal sometimes have lacked defensively is in some ways offset by these two guys. Gabriel is 6'3". I think Saliba is 6'4". Pablo Mari is 6'4", whatever he might be. So in terms of the players that they brought in, there's a difference between the, you know, 6'1" guys like Luiz, Socrates. Mustafi is, I think, about 5'11", you know. So and he's very good in the air, in fairness to him. But, you know, in terms of physical presence, these guys can really add something. But I was just wondering, in both of those cases, Saliba and Gabriel, how accustomed are they to playing in a back three with somebody like Luiz, you know, in the middle, and they're playing in that slightly different position. You have a slightly different role as a central defender in a three than as part of a two.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Gabriel has, as far as I can recall, has only played in a back four at Lille. Always been Jose Font and Gabriel. They've played a flat back four under Christophe Galtier. So slight question mark there. Like I say, though, his distribution is good. I don't see why he wouldn't be able to adapt to playing on the left side of a three. Saliba has played both. Saliba has played on the right side of a back three or back five, if you like. I think I prefer him in a back four. Mm. He's played very well alongside Loic Perrin, a little bit like Gabriel with Font. Loic Perrin has, you know, Saint-Etienne's stalwart captain, 35 years of age, just retired now. But, you know, that was a really important sort of player for William Saliba to learn alongside. Mm. And Loic Perrin has sort of talked glowingly of Saliba, saying he really listens and he really wants advice. And they formed a great partnership. So Saint-Etienne sort of have alternated between the back five and back four, and Saliba, he's been fine in both of those scenarios. Yeah.
Okay. Just finally, we could talk very quickly about Nicolas Pepe. And when he signed, we spoke on this podcast, and you were very excited about what he might be able to do. And I think there were signs this season that as it developed and as it progressed, Pepe was feeling a lot more comfortable at Arsenal. He certainly understood what was needed and wanted from him as the season went on. I don't think he was helped, obviously, by the turmoil at Arsenal under Unai Emery, and then the change to Freddie Ljungberg and Mikel Arteta coming in, and it just being one of the craziest seasons that anyone can remember from an Arsenal point of view. All the other challenges you face as a new player coming to a new country with all that other stuff on top of it, it does make it a little bit difficult. But I think what a point you made was that it was his second season at Lille which really saw him kick on. So I'm not putting you on the spot here and putting this all down to you, but do you feel like he is the kind of player who may need some time to settle at a club, and in his second season with Arsenal, we could and should expect more from him?
Yeah, do you think our signings from Lille are getting better? Because we've done Pascal Sigon, Gervinho, Nicolas Pepe. So it's on an upward curve, I think.
Hopefully, fingers crossed.
But no, you're right. I was really excited about Pepe last year, and I found it frustrating a lot of the time watching him, just because I know he's capable of doing so much more than he has done. Okay, his stats are all right in the end. He's got, 9 goals and 9 or 10 assists, but he honestly is capable of being so much more involved, combining more with his teammates. Now, why hasn't it quite clicked for Nicolas Pepe? I think there are different factors. Some coming from the team and the way the team is set up. Pepe is at his best when the ball is in front of him. When the game is in front of him, when he's got space to run into. And certainly for the first few months under Emery, I just felt like he was getting the ball all the time on that right wing with his back to goal, with two defenders on him. And he'd try a few little tricks, see what he could do, and then he'd pass backwards. And it was just quite infuriating. And I think under Arteta, we've seen the last few months Arsenal using him a little bit better. But by the same token, I would say that Pepe's disappointed me just in terms of, not so much his attitude, but he's just lacking conviction a lot of the time. And he'll go on a dribble or he'll go on a run, and he just won't quite see the action through to the end. And I think that's confidence. We saw when Freddie took over after Unai Emery, he also left Pepe out. Arteta at the beginning left Pepe out quite a lot, and they obviously want a bit more from him on the training ground, a bit more in terms of, his attitude and his hunger to make the difference. So, I think it's both Arsenal, Arteta, who need to look at how best to use Nicolas Pepe, but it's also up to Nicolas Pepe to really sort of knuckle down, whether that's in training or out on the pitch, sort of making sure there is more end product. Because there have been moments this season, his goal against West Ham, there are a couple of other performances where I thought, okay, this is it. Now,
FA Cup final, now, I thought he was fantastic.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
The FA Cup final is, I think, what gives me a lot of hope, because he wasn't just, decisive, as they like to say in France, sort of setting up a goal, but he was really sort of getting stuck in. And I think, the defensive side of his game has definitely improved. I think it was pretty awful probably at the start in terms of, coming back and helping the fullback. I think he does that a lot more now. So, again, that's something that Arteta is going to be working on with him, his discipline off the ball. But the key is to get him running forward with the ball, running into space. That is where he can just destroy teams. And yeah, I'm confident, Andrew. I was confident a year ago, but I'm still confident. And I think going back to what I said about the Arsenal fans these days, because they get a tough time. We get a tough time in the press for being demanding or spoiled or what have you. But I think things are changing. And a lot of Arsenal fans, they recognise Pepe's talent and his ability. And I think they're behind him. And they know that, if he can get that confidence and if the team can play to his strengths more, then, we could see a really good season from him.
I suppose, the other thing just finally is the difference in how he is being asked or how he was asked to play at Arsenal versus how he was asked to play at Lille. Like, it is quite different. When we think about Arsenal now, we want to think about a team that dominates possession and, is more in control of games than we've been in recent seasons. But that sort of comes at odds with a team that's set up to counterattack in the way that he was so effective with Lille.
Yeah. And I think I did mention that last year as a sort of caveat that, he was so good at Lille because they defended in numbers and then used Pepe to counterattack. I mean, what I also expected and haven't really seen, I really thought on the pitch he'd strike up a great understanding with Lacazette and Aubameyang, partly because of, the French, but also the kind of personalities of the three of them. And we've sort of seen, when the three of them play, I just feel like that Lacazette and Aubameyang kind of, they have that connection and they combine a lot more, and we don't really see Pepe getting that involved in that. And,
I think he's got it with Aubameyang. I think there have been times this season where he has delivered for Aubameyang and vice versa, maybe. But I agree with you. I don't think we've seen it so much with Lacazette. Maybe that's the way that Lacazette is being asked to play in the system that we were using towards the end of the season. But I do feel like there was something building there between Aubameyang and Pepe.
Yeah, and the other thing, there were a few performances where Maitland-Niles played right back, and I thought Pepe looked like a slightly different player, a better player, because Maitland-Niles, you know, okay, he's got his flaws and often his crossing's not great, but he was, you know, he bombed beyond Pepe, and that then opens up the space for Pepe to cut inside, to combine with him, and, you know, hopefully Hector Bellerin can, you know, be fit and get back to his top level so he can start overlapping a bit more. Because I think Pepe benefits as well from having that sort of possibility to combine with the right back. But but you're right, you know, with playing against very tight grouped defense, you know, packed defenses is not, well, it makes it hard for all attackers, but in particular for somebody who relies a lot on his pace like Nicola Pepe. But that's, you know, that's something that Arteta needs to work on. And I think you can still create those spaces by being good at pressing, you know, high up the pitch. And then when you get that transition and the team doesn't have loads of defenders, the opponents don't have lots of defenders back, that's where you can use Pepe's speed.
Okay, well, look, we've got things to look forward to. And, you know, despite some concerns that some of the age profiles of a couple of signings and a couple of people staying might be a little bit the other way, when you're looking at Saliba, Gabriel, Pepe still coming into their primes, hopefully Arsenal can find the right balance. And look, no doubt we'll catch up with you again during the season. But for now, Matt, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much.
Good stuff. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you to Matt. You can find him on Twitter at Matt Spiro, at Matt Spiro. And if you're looking for some reading material, I do highly recommend the book that he brought out earlier this year. You might remember he was on the Arscast talking about it, called Sacre Bleu, Zidane to Mbappe, A Football Journey. A look at the ups and downs of France and French football between 1998 and 2018. And of course, a lot happened in that time period. So if you're looking for the definitive version of what went on in French football there, do check out Matt's book. As I said, it's called Sacre Bleu, Zidane to Mbappe, A Football Journey. You can get it from your local independent bookstore. They'll be happy to order it for you. Or if you want to get it directly from the publishers, just go to bitebackpublishing.com. That's bitebackpublishing.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Okay, joining me now on the Arscast for some midfield Mikel Arteta press conference chat is James. Hello, James.
Hello, mate. How you doing?
I'm all right. We heard from our manager for the first time in a few weeks. It seems quick after the end of last season, but here we are. We're ready to go again. Community Shield on Saturday against Liverpool. But there were some interesting bits and pieces from this press conference. Look, he talked about a lot of stuff, which is already out there. There'll be more stuff coming out over the weekend, of course, with some of the embargoed material. There was stuff about COVID. There was stuff about transfers, Gabriel not being signed yet. But I thought we might just focus on the midfield bits and pieces that he talked about. The first one I want to touch on is Ainsley Maitland-Niles, who, as we know, is sort of half in, half out in terms of the rumours anyway. And we've had a bid turned down, or bid from Wolves that we turned down. But it was quite interesting to hear Arteta talk about Maitland-Niles. He says he's a player since I joined, I said, I really like. The best way to show that is I've played him in the most important games of the season and he responded really well. So that's where we are with the player. He goes on to talk about how he's happy to talk to a player about his career, etc., etc. So does it feel a little bit to you like he's trying to convince Maitland-Niles that his future is here, and maybe Maitland-Niles has got an offer from somewhere that's very tempting, and he's just trying to, you know, publicly put a little bit of pressure on him and say, look, I showed this faith in you, and that's what I think of you.
Maybe. I mean, I feel like... you know, the noises we're getting out of Arsenal is that obviously they've turned down the bid for Maitland-Niles, but maybe that there is a price that they would be prepared to see him go at. Clearly, from Wolves' perspective, they're looking at him. They're about to sell Doherty, aren't they, to Tottenham, who's their right wing back, and Maitland-Niles, I think, would presumably fill that spot for them. I look at these quotes and I kind of think, I read the section about, you know, we're happy to talk to players, to listen to what they are feeling at every stage of their career. And it feels like it's kind of putting the ball in his court. It's sort of saying, well, you know, if he goes, it's because he wants to go. It's not because I necessarily wanted him to go, which I think, given the way Maitland-Niles played towards the end of the season, makes a degree of sense, and also is probably a smart way for Arteta to position himself. Their quotes didn't leave me thinking, I think he's going to stay. I still got the sense that there was that sort of wiggle room there, that if the right price is met, he'll go. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was maybe a little bit of a, look, you know, I like you. I've played you in the FA Cup semi-final. I've played you in the FA Cup final. Mm. You know, this is not just a way for me to show you that I like you. It's because, you know, you don't pick a player for a cup final just to sort of try and convince him to stay for next season. You don't do that. You do it because you genuinely believe in the player. So I think there is an element of that. I wonder as well, as we move on to, we'll move on to other things, just, you know, when we listen to managers in press conferences and when we hear the things they have to say, you know, at face value, things can mean one thing. I wonder, is there a need maybe to read between the lines when it comes to some of the things that he says and many managers say, in the sense that it's like, well, we're not going to say we don't like Maitland-Niles. We're not going to say we want to get rid of him. We've turned down an offer that we think is not good enough from Wolves. So we're going to talk up the qualities of the player in order to extract the maximum value from him, in a way.
I think that's absolutely right. Like I said, I think there is a bit of positioning going on, and maybe even a bit of negotiating too. You know, I would like Maitland-Niles to stay, but I think all the momentum has been towards him leaving. And I think if Wolves come back with another 5 or 10 million quid, I think that is probably what will happen. And actually, my overriding feeling listening to Arteta today was that he was kind of playing everything pretty close to his chest. You know, he was kind of keeping his options open on almost everything he said, which I think says something about the vagaries of the transfer market and the fact that so many deals and so many players' futures are kind of in the balance right now.
Yeah, one of the other ones is Matteo Guendouzi, a guy who didn't feature at all towards the end of last season. We know he didn't make the squad. He didn't make the cup final. He missed out on Wembley. He missed out on a medal. He missed out on the occasion. And, you know, until today, I don't think anybody would have said there is a future for him at Arsenal. But after what Arteta said at his press conference, you know, it feels perhaps, on the one hand, like the door might be open to him. He says he's spoken to him during the off season, and he says, telling him exactly that he's going to be part of the first team squad. And at the moment, he's like any other player. He deserves to be treated like exactly the same, and I will do that, blah, blah, blah. And he talked again about this idea that, you know, everybody starts from zero all the time in football. What you did 2 weeks ago or 2 years ago doesn't matter. It's what you're able to contribute to the team now. So then, you know, on the one hand, you're going, well, this is perhaps expedient because the market is difficult. And here's a decent young player that we, you know, might want to keep. And maybe he's learned his lesson. Maybe he grows from this. Maybe he becomes a better player, a better person. You know, and I've given him this chance and he feels grateful to me and the team, and we get a much better Matteo Guendouzi. But at the same time, maybe it's just like there's no offers from Matteo Guendouzi, you know?
Yeah. I do wonder about that. I mean, you know, he was the kind of big hope in terms of producing some revenue for us this summer. And the only real transfer stories that we've heard about Matteo Guendouzi have involved Arsenal offering him out in swap deals, none of which have kind of been deemed acceptable. So, I think there may be an element of that. I mean, there's a number of midfield players, and you know, you can count Maitland-Niles among them potentially in that central area of the park. And I think it's inevitable that some will go, but not all will go. And I think Arteta probably has to guard himself so that if he's left with one, he's not publicly said we've absolutely no use to him. I mean,
yeah,
I don't fully buy his. His thing of, you know, what he did 2 weeks ago didn't matter. I mean, it didn't feel like that in May, did it? Or in June, sorry.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
when,
yeah.
When we came back from... and Guendouzi was very much kind of out after the Brighton game. You know, it is pretty remarkable turnaround from Arteta. But maybe, again, there's a bit of positioning. Maybe there's that thing of, well, we're not getting the offers we want because everybody knows we want to get rid of him. If we open the door... to him making a comeback, or you know, even if we give him a bit of playing time, put him in the shop window, it might drum up some more interest or get it more to the level that we deem acceptable. I mean, I'd love to believe that, you know, there's going to be this great big turnaround and Guendouzi's learnt his lesson, but it felt so far gone that I'm a little bit sceptical about that possibility.
Yeah, I am too, to be honest. Unless they've had like a really open, frank conversation about what happened and why it happened and everything else. And there has been some sort of rapprochement on the part of Guendouzi because, you know, he was basically excluded. He was not even in the squad. He wasn't training with the team. He was nowhere when we played the cup final. You know, things like that do indicate that a player's future at a club is very much in the balance, would be a polite, diplomatic way of putting it, you know.
He's also, I think, 2 years away from his contract's expiry. So,
yeah,
you know, in an ideal world, if you're considering keeping him, you want him to sign an extension. Well, it feels very difficult for that to be agreed at the time being. So this really is the time, I think, if you're considering selling Guendouzi, to do it. But it is just interesting, isn't it? I mean, I've sort of felt for a while that Arsenal bringing in another player beyond Gabriel, which we assume is going to get over the line sometime soon, not as soon as people would like, it seems, but soon nonetheless, that Arsenal will have to move somebody out in order to do that. And maybe that's not quite as easy as we hoped it might be, you know, with the climate being what it is.
Do you feel a little bit like, you know, because of the amount of players who are potentially departures, right?
Yeah.
The amount of players who potentially could leave the club, that every time there's a story about one of them, we sort of believe instantly that, well, that's it. That's the end for him. There are going to be players who are linked strongly with moves away from the club. There are going to be players who we would have been willing to sell if the right offer came in, who stay.
That's
and
who are
going to have to be part of the team next season. So in some ways, it's really easy, isn't it, when you hear about X player is linked with X club, and if you're okay with that, you're sort of like, well, that's it. I've washed my hands of that guy. Let's get rid of him. And then it's sort of like, oh, God, we have to keep him? What's that? You know, that kind of way.
Of course, and that's why the manager's going to be a bit non-committal. I mean, I'm reminded of when he was asked about Alex Lacazette's future, you know, during the sort of run-in last season, and he kind of said, well, you know, it's a conversation we need to sit down and we need to have, and he didn't really say one way or the other what he felt about it, and that's because he's one of those players that Arsenal would potentially sell if the right offer came in. But you could probably apply that to about 70% of the squad, to be honest with you. But Arteta can't afford to go around burning bridges and saying, no, we actually want rid of that guy, he's no good to us, or, you know, I've completely had it with this personality. So he's in a tricky position because he doesn't know. I mean, when is the transfer deadline? It's in October, right?
October the 6th, yeah.
He has no idea, really, what the makeup of his squad is going to be come that day. So he can't burn any bridges.
Yeah, I mean, the squad for the first day of the season could be remarkably different from the squad, you know, for our fourth or fifth game. I think there's four games in the Premier League until the window closes. So you could be looking, at very different lineups, pre and post transfer window.
And to that point, by the way, I know that, you know, some of the younger players in the squad, people who've sort of might maybe be looking to get some first team experience, go out on loan. There's a bit of uncertainty at the moment. The club can't really tell them, you know, well, we definitely need you, or you're going to go out.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's the position that they're in, unfortunately. It is a kind of a bit of a limbo period.
I think he did say, you know, nobody's really moved aggressively in the market yet, and things are going to happen, a lot's going to happen between now and October the 6th, which is what we were saying, on the Arscast Extra the other day. That's just a regular cough this time, by the way.
Sure, sure. Not one of those special coughs.
Not one of those special coughs. And we were saying that, like, as the deadline approaches, things will start to heat up. And I think that's kind of what Arteta is looking at and what he's hinting at. He talked about Mohamed Elneny, who's back in the team, scored a cracking goal the other night against MK Dons. And he said, I know him really well. I played with him. He's a positive character. While he's with us, he'll be given all our support in the best possible environment for them to perform as high as they can. And then he was asked, like, do you expect him to stay? And he was like, well, we don't know. The 6th of October is still too far. It's pretty unpredictable to know what's going to happen. And in terms of the tone of voice of that one, it felt a lot more like, well, chances are we're going to, let this guy go. Again, it's about finding the destination, but it didn't seem like this one was like, well, we really want to keep him. Keep the price high.
He didn't say this sort of, he knows what I think of him or some sort of telltale phrases. I think you're right. But conversely, I do think that if, I don't know, buyers came in for Guendouzi, Maitland-Niles, Torreira, and they were sort of replaced with, a top quality of central midfield player, it's not impossible for me to foresee a scenario where Elneny is around as a kind of backup. I mean, I really do think it's kind of that fluid at the moment, and it just depends who stays and who goes. I mean, Elneny, we know his limitations for sure. But I think some of his weaknesses are a bit overstated. I think he's kind of very much a kind of 6-7 out of 10 player. And he's never better than that, but he's only rarely worse.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that's fair. I mean, in terms of what you get from him, there's an element of reliability. I mean, it's not brilliant, is it? You know, it's like driving at 50 miles an hour to get somewhere and no higher or no lower than 50 miles an hour the whole time, That's very handy. Other times you're not going to be able to get yourself out of trouble, but there is that. I mean, he does have a contract until 2022 as well. So, those are things that we might have to deal with when it comes to him. And I think you're right. Like, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that if we sell Guendouzi, if we sell Torreira, and if we bring in, a top midfielder, if you like, that might preclude other purchases in that area of the pitch. So you might have to rely on an Elneny to give you a bit of depth alongside Xhaka, alongside Joe Willock or whoever else might be in there. So one to keep an eye on. The other one was Danny Ceballos. Where he said, let me just get up what he said about Ceballos here. We have some talks. Danny knows what I think about him. He was pretty clear with me as well that his intention is to remain with us, but obviously Real Madrid are involved and we don't yet know what they want to do with the player. And he says, he's a player we're interested in because we saw in the last few months what he's capable of bringing to us. Now, while that happened, or just after that happened, there's a story in El Mundo Deportivo, which I think you have to take with a pinch of salt, that he wants and has made clear to Real Madrid that he wants to play for Real Betis next season. Now, he is a fan. He's from Sevilla, or down that way anyway, and he is a fan of Real Betis. So, yeah, I wonder if that's, again, a little bit of positioning on behalf of Real Madrid to push Arsenal into making a move. I feel like he would probably have a better paid season at Arsenal than he might do at Real Madrid. Although I wonder if Betis... I guess that doesn't make sense, actually, given that Real Madrid would have to cover his wages one way or the other. So,
well, I think it would be better for Real Madrid, shall we say, if Arsenal are the club who take him. Because I think Arsenal, you would think, would be able to make a greater contribution towards his salary than Betis, although...
That's the way I wanted to put it, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. The reports in Spain were saying that Arsenal had sort of offered, I think, to cover 50% of his salary. I think Madrid would probably be looking for more than that. But, I mean, it would be quite a... It would be almost a turnaround of sort of Guendouzi levels for Zinedine Zidane to decide he actually really likes Danny Ceballos and he's going to use him. I don't necessarily foresee it. I think he really was excellent in sort of the run-in last season, and I think if we can get him back, it's actually at this stage, at this point in time, a relatively cost-effective way to get in a quality midfield player. I know it doesn't solve the sort of long-term issue, and you know Arsenal probably would have to think about how they could eventually make the commitment required to buy him. The better he plays, the more expensive he gets, I suppose.
Mm. Well, there's the gamble, isn't it? That if you put a purchase clause in the deal, which is you know reasonable on both sides, if he plays poorly and doesn't have a good season, and we're not obliged to buy him, that works. Mm. And if he plays well, and we can get him for what seems like a reasonable fee, maybe that might be a way of doing it. I mean, Real Madrid need money, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that one happens, and I think. I mean, the only worry is, you know, how long might it take to happen? You know, it could be October, like we say, before we get him. And, you know, we're talking about a lot of central midfield players here. And I think we're all sort of looking at the team this season and potentially switching to three in midfield rather than two. But when we played the friendly in midweek against MK Dons, it was the back three. And I just think, given all the question marks over that part of the pitch, I'm not sure we're ready, really, to kind of move to a midfield three. I'm not sure we have the personnel yet necessarily in place. So
no.
It's a huge area of the team with a lot of question marks over it that need addressing. And as much as I'm enthused by the signing of Gabriel, and you know I can kind of get on board with the idea of Willian, and I'm looking forward to Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang hopefully signing his contract, that is a massive, massive concern, isn't it? The middle of the park.
Yeah, it's the big area. It's the biggest issue that we have to solve. We've got too many numbers at centre-half, but plenty of options. You know, fullbacks are pretty well sorted. We've got a great striker, really solid international backup, if you like, in Lacazette. We've got Nicolas Pepe. We've got Willian. We've got Martinelli. We've got Saka. You know, so there's a lot going on in that area of the pitch. So it is the midfield, and I think for me it's the technical quality and the technical security of the players that we bring in that might dictate how we play. That there aren't any stories about Lucas Torreira beyond some vague ones that Fiorentina might be interested again. So again, he's one of those where I think if we sell him, it'll be fine, and if we keep him, I think they'll also be fine with that, you know, because he's a decent player and could work well. But you're right, I think this is, over the coming weeks anyway, the biggest area that Arsenal have to sort out. So we'll wait and see.
We'll wait and see indeed.
All right. We'll leave it there. We'll talk on Monday, of course, after the Community Shield taking place tomorrow at Wembley.
At Wembley.
Are you going? Are you going to be there?
No, I won't be there this time.
Right. Unlucky, James. Can't win them all.
I know. Well, listen, I'll be watching and I will be reporting from my sofa. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. I'll be curious to see kind of who gets a run out.
Yeah, it will. It will. I've said earlier in the podcast, I don't think it really makes a great deal of difference what happens in this game, because it's more a fitness exercise than anything else. But as ever, you know, as fans, we're looking for the things that we can read into and little clues here and there. So maybe we'll get some of those. Anyway, have a good weekend. We'll talk on Monday.
Bye-bye.
You know where to find James. He's on Twitter at Gunnerblog, in The Athletic, and of course on the Arscast Extra, which we will have for you on Monday. Looking back at whatever happens at Wembley in the Community Shield against Liverpool. Thank you, as ever, for being here, for subscribing, for listening, for sharing, for all the feedback, all the comments, and everything else. If you want to get involved in our Patreon, you can do that, patreon.com/arsblog, Discord chat server, fantasy football this season as well, in which you can win cash prizes and Arsenal shirts. It's patreon.com/arsblog. Enjoy the game tomorrow, hopefully. If not, don't worry about it. There are more important games coming up this season. Have yourselves a great weekend anyway. James and I will be here on Monday, as I said. So until then, take it easy. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Mikel, it's been a big week in the world of football, and all eyes are on Barcelona, of course. What's going on there with Lionel Messi? Word is on the grapevine that Arsenal are interested in bringing him to the Premier League. Is there any truth in that?
Absolutely.
Oh, seriously?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
You're not kidding?
We are trying to finalize the deal. That's what I can tell you at the moment.
Well, that is very exciting news, Mikel. Do you have any time frame on when it might be done?
Well, I don't know. I'll make the decision tomorrow.
Just one more from me, Mikel. My wife, yeah, seriously, my wife was wondering if she could have a picture of you doing yoga, maybe where you're a little bit sweaty.
Yes.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.